It was certainly an awesome place, a round green hill on top of another hill, long since grown over with trees, and one little, low doorway leading into it. The tunnels inside were a perfect maze till you got to know them, and they were lined and roofed with smooth stones, and on the stones, peering in the twilight, Caspian saw strange characters and snaky patterns, and pictures in which the form of a lion was repeated again and again. It all seemed to belong to an even older Narnia than the Narnia of which his nurse had told him. It was after they had taken up their quarters in and around the How that fortune began to turn against them. King Miraz's scouts soon found their new lair, and he and his army arrived on the edge of the woods, and as so often happens, the enemy turned out stronger than they had reckoned. Caspian's heart sank as he saw company after company arriving, and though Miraz's men may have been afraid of going into the wood, they were even more afraid of Miraz. And with him in command, they carried battle deeply into it, and sometimes almost to the How itself. Caspian and other captains, of course, made many sorties into the open country. Thus there was fighting on most days, and sometimes by night as well. But Caspian's party had, on the whole, the worst of it. At last there came a night when everything had gone as badly as possible, and the rain, which had been falling heavily all day, had ceased at nightfall only to give place to raw cold. That morning Caspian had arranged what was his biggest battle yet, and all had hung their hopes on it. He, with most of the dwarfs, was to have fallen on the king's right wing at daybreak, and then, when they were heavily engaged, giant Wimbleweather, with the centaurs and some of the fiercest beasts, was to have broken out from another place and endeavoured to cut the king's right off from the rest of the army. But it had all failed. No one had warned Caspian, because no one in these later days of Narnia remembered, that giants are not at all clever. Poor Wimbleweather, though brave as a lion, was a true giant in that respect. He had broken out at the wrong time and from the wrong place, and both his party and Caspian's had suffered badly and done the enemy little harm. The best of the bears had been hurt, a centaur terribly wounded, and there were few in Caspian's party who had not lost blood. It was a gloomy company that huddled under the dripping trees to eat their scanty supper. The gloomiest of all was Giant Wimbleweather. He knew it was all his fault. He sat in silence, shedding big tears which collected on the end of his nose, and then fell off with a huge splash on the whole bivouac of the mice, who had just been beginning to get warm and drowsy. They all jumped up, shaking the water out of their ears and wringing their little blankets, and asked the giant in shrill but forcible voices whether he thought they weren't wet enough without this sort of thing. And then other people woke up and told the mice they had been enrolled as scouts and not as a concert party, and asked why they couldn't keep quiet. And Wimbleweather tiptoed away to find some place where he could be miserable in peace, and stepped on somebody's tail, and somebody, they said afterwards it was a fox, bit him. And so everyone was out of temper. But in the secret and magical chamber at the heart of the How, King Caspian, with Cornelius and the Badger, and Nicobrick and Trumpkin, were at council. Thick pillars of ancient workmanship supported the roof. In the centre was the stone itself, a stone table split right down the centre and covered with what had once been writing of some kind, but ages of wind and rain and snow had almost worn it away in old times, when the stone table had stood on the hilltop and the mound had not yet been built above it. They were not using the table nor sitting round it. It was too magic a thing for any common use. They sat on logs a little way from it, and between them was a rough wooden table on which stood a rude clay lamp lighting up their pale faces and throwing big shadows on the walls. "If Your Majesty is ever to use the horn," said Truffle Hunter, "I think the time has now come." Caspian had, of course, told them of his treasure several days ago. "We are certainly in great need," answered Caspian, "but it is hard to be sure we are at our greatest. Supposing there came an even worse need, and we had already used it?"
"By that argument," said Nicobrick, "Your Majesty will never use it until it is too late."
"I agree with that," said Dr. Cornelius. "And what do you think, Trumpkin?" asked Caspian.
"Oh, as for me," said the Red Dwarf, who had been listening with complete indifference, "Your Majesty knows I think the horn and that bit of broken stone over there and your great King Peter and your lion Aslan are all eggs in moonshine. It's all one to me when your Majesty blows the horn. All I insist on is that the army is told nothing about it. There's no good raising hopes of magical help, which, as I think, are sure to be disappointed."
"Then in the name of Aslan, we will wind Queen Susan's horn," said Caspian.
"There is one thing, sire," said Dr. Cornelius, "that should perhaps be done first. We do not know what form the help will take. It might call Aslan himself from overseas, but I think it is more likely to call Peter the High King and his mighty consorts down from the high past. But in either case, I do not think we can be sure that the help will come to this very spot."
"You never said a truer word," put in Trumpkin.
"I think," went on the learned man, "that they, or he, will come back to one or another of the ancient places of Narnia. This, where we now sit, is the most ancient and most deeply magical of all. And here, I think, the answer is likeliest to come, but there are two others. One is Lantern Waste, upriver west of Beaver's Dam, where the royal children first appeared in Narnia, as the records tell. The other is down at the river mouth, where their castle of Caer Paravel once stood. And if Aslan himself comes, that would be the best place for meeting him too, for every story says that he is the son of the great emperor over sea, and over the sea he will pass. I should like very much to send messengers to both places, to Lantern Waste and the river mouth, to receive them, or him, or it."
"Just as a thought," muttered Trumpkin, "the first result of all this foolery is not to bring us help, but to lose us two fighters."
"Who would you think of sending, Dr. Cornelius?" asked Caspian.
"Squirrels are best for getting through enemy country without being caught," said Truffle Hunter.
"All our squirrels, and we haven't many," said Nickerbrick, "are rather flighty. The only one I'd trust on the job like that would be Pattertwig."
"Let it be Pattertwig, then," said King Caspian. "And who for our other messenger? I know you'd go, Truffle Hunter, but you haven't the speed, nor you, Dr. Cornelius."
"I won't go," said Nickerbrick. "With all these humans and beasts about, there must be a dwarf here to see that the dwarfs are fairly treated."
"Thimbles and thunderstorms," cried Trumpkin in a rage. "Is that how you speak to the king? Send me, sire, I'll go."
"But I thought you didn't believe in the horn, Trumpkin," said Caspian.
"No more I do, your Majesty. But what's that got to do with it? I might as well die on a wild goose chase as die here. You are my king. I know the difference between giving advice and taking orders. You've had my advice, and now it's the time for orders."
"I will never forget this, Trumpkin," said Caspian. "Send for Pattertwig, one of you. And when shall I blow the horn?"
"I would wait for sunrise, your Majesty," said Dr. Cornelius. "That sometimes has an effect in operations of white magic."
A few minutes later, Pattertwig arrived and had his task explained to him. As he was, like many squirrels, full of courage and dash and energy and excitement and mischief, not to say conceit, he no sooner heard it than he was eager to be off. It was arranged that he should run for Lantern Waste while Trumpkin made the shorter journey to the river mouth. After a hasty meal, they both set off with fervent thanks and good wishes of the king, the badger, and Cornelius.